Today, the problem with being data dependent is being data dependent. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news, and this is our weekly market update. Well, central bankers have been at pains to say that they're being data dependent in setting monetary policy. But the problem is now markets are chasing every new scrap of news and then trying to react ahead of the central bankers, creating an uncertainty monster. So an awful August actually gave way now to an uncertain September, because investors hope the data this month will confirm that the seemingly relentless rise in interest rates will end soon, meaning a respite for both stocks and bonds. But on the other hand, if things go the other way, it could go pear-shaped. And there, of course, are a few snags. The September area is chock full of risk events, including central bank meetings, a G20 summit, and make or break data, not to mention that it tends to be the worst month of the year for the S&P 500. So now that the Federal Reserve Jackson Hole confab is over, investors are strapping in for a potentially volatile month. The S&P 500 tends to post its worst monthly performance in September, with an average decline of 0.7%. If you go back to data, well, as far as 1945. And there are plenty of catalysts for volatility. The September the 13th US inflation reading would likely have to support the narrative of cooling consumer prices and resilient growth that has boosted stocks for most of the year. And investors will also scrutinize the message from Federal Chair Jerome Powell after the central bank's September 20th meeting to determine the likelihood of another hike this year. Meanwhile, there's a risk of a fourth federal government shutdown in a decade if squabbling lawmakers cannot reach a deal by the September 30th deadline, when funding runs out with the end of the current fiscal year. And on the data front, US services sector activity is due next Wednesday. And interestingly, credit rating agency Moody's raised its 2023 US economic growth forecast on Friday, but cut its estimate next year for China, saying that while the risk of recession has fallen in the US, China's challenges are mounting. We've raised our growth forecast for the US to 1.9% in 23 from 1.1% in our May outlook, acknowledging the strong underlying economic momentum, Moody's said in the report. The firm, now the only big three agency to have top-notch triple A rating for the US following Fitch's downgrade last month, kept his 24 growth forecast at 1%, saying that high interest rates would act as a brake on the economy. We believe that it will be difficult for the Fed to achieve a sustainable fall in inflation to its 2% target if the current economic conditions persist, Moody says. A few quarters of below trend growth is required, in our view, to prevent overheating. But in contrast, it said China was facing considerable growth challenges stemming from weak business and consumer confidence amid economic and policy uncertainty, continued property sector woes, and an aging working population. So Moody's kept its growth projection for this year at 5%, but cut its 24 forecast to 4% from 4.5% previously. And it rates China at A1 with a stable outlook, which is four notches below the US's top AAA grade. Data from China suggests the economic recovery from a prolonged zero COVID policy remains muted, as the reopening momentum seen in March, April and May appears to be waning, Moody said in its report. We believe that low consumer confidence is holding back household spending, and economic and policy uncertainty will continue to weigh on business decisions. Now, back in the US, the Labor Department's report showed the August unemployment rate rose to 3.8%, while the wage growth slowed. Non-farm payrolls actually rose more than expected, though data in July was revised lower, 157,000 job additions. Payrolls came in higher than forecast at 187,000 from 157,000 in July, and jobs growth averaged 150,000 over the past 3 months. Average hourly earnings rose 0.2% versus 0.4% in July, and in the 12 months through August, wages rose 4.3% after increasing 4.4% in July. The jobless rate rose to 3.8%. That's the highest level since February 2022, from 3.5% in July. And the labour force participation rate rose to 62.8%, the highest level since February 2020, and up from 62.6% in July. So the data added to recent macroeconomic evidence that the Federal Reserve is winning its battle against inflation, and it cemented expectations the central bank is near the end of its interest rate hiking cycle. The data makes the case for the Fed becoming more dovish as we head into the fall. If the end of tightening comes sooner than later, that could lead to a substantial rally in stocks, said Keith Buchanan, a portfolio manager at Globert Investment in Atlanta. At a conference in Frankfurt, though, Federal Reserve Bank of Cleveland President Loretta Mester said the Fed wasn't ready to pivot. Although there has been some progress, inflation remains too high, she said. And interest rates futures suggest traders see a 93% chance the Fed will keep interest rates unchanged at its meeting later in the month. That's according to the FedWatch tool. So the S&P 500 climbed 0.18% to end at 4,515. The NASDAQ declined 0.2% to 14,031, while the Dow Jones Industrial Average rose 0.33% to 34,837. Of the 11 S&P 500 sectors, six rose, led by energy up 2.05%, followed by a 1.1% gain in materials. And for the week, the S&P 500 rose 2.5%, the Dow added 1.43%, and the NASDAQ climbed 3.25%. Looking at specific stocks, Walt Disney dropped 2.4% and Charter Communications fell 3.6% after the companies traded salvos over an unresolved distribution agreement after several channels, including SPN, went dark on Thursday for customers of Charter's Spectrum cable service. Other streaming companies also fell, with Warner Brothers Discovery down 12%, Paramount Global losing 9.5%, and Fox Corp down nearly 6%. Broadcom fell 5.5% after the chipmaker projected current quarter revenue below expectations, while Dell Technologies surged 21% after the personal computer maker raised its annual forecast for revenue and profit. But the most traded stock on the S&P 500 was Tesla, with $32.6 billion worth of shares exchanged during the session. The shares declined 5% after the EV maker cut prices for its Model S and Model X vehicles in the US. And the US stock market will remain closed on Monday for the Labor Day holiday. The 10-year bond was at 4.182, while the 2-year was at 4.876, off recent highs, but still elevated and still signalling higher for longer, and the recession inversion is still intact. Oil prices edged higher on Friday, registering strong weekly gains on optimism that the group of major crude producers will extend output cuts to the end of the year. Russian Deputy Prime Minister Alexander Novak said on Thursday that Moscow will reach a new deal with its peers in OPEC Plus to further cut supplies and will outline more reductions in production next week. The reductions will likely add to ongoing supply cuts by Russia and Saudi Arabia, presenting a tighter supply outlook for the rest of the year. The US crude traded 2.89% higher at $68.02 a barrel, while the Brent contract climbed 2.49% to $88.91. Both contracts were up more than 4% this week, breaking a two-week losing streak, with the US contract in particular benefiting from substantially larger than expected draw in US inventories. Additionally, gold futures edged up 0.02% to $1,966 an ounce, while the Euro-US dollar traded down 0.6% to 1.0775. Over in Europe, August was a difficult month for European investors too, with the pan-European Stoxx 600 index falling 2.6%. But European stocks posted the best week since mid-July, supported by gains from earlier in the week and helped by unexpectedly positive Chinese factory data. The DAX index in Germany traded 0.67% lower, the FTSE in London rose 0.34%, and the CAC 40 in France fell 0.27%. The Stoxx Europe 600 index was largely unchanged eventually at the close, pairing gains from earlier in the session, and energy stocks outperformed after Morgan Stanley double upgraded the sector, while autos were laggards after UBS Group cut ratings on Renault and Volkswagen. Sentiment has been somewhat subdued this week after data showed a drop in China's manufacturing activity for a fifth consecutive month. And meanwhile, year-end inflation stopped slowing in August, presenting European Central Bank officials with a quandary as they weigh whether price pressures are too persistent to risk a pause in interest rate hikes. European Central Bank President Christine Lagarde hinted at a pause in the central bank's rate hiking cycle later this month. But the data released on Thursday showed that the Eurozone inflation was unchanged at 5.3% in August, defying expectations for a drop to 5.1% as energy costs rose sharply over the month. In fact, the ECB's inflation outlook hasn't changed much over the summer, even though prospects for the economy worsened, according to the ECB Vice President Louis de Guindos. Meanwhile, Morgan Stanley thinks the latest economic figures means the European Central Bank will not hike interest rates any further. The combination of weak economic data and sticky inflation is actually a nightmare scenario for the ECB, a senior analyst at Swissquote Bank said. The ECB should raise rates to continue fighting inflation, even though the underlying economies are under pressure. In fact, Germany looks likely to be the only major economy to contract this year. Business activity there shrank at the fastest pace over 3 years in August. Business sentiment has deteriorated and the economy stagnated in the second quarter. No wonder the region's economic powerhouse is once again being called the sick man of Europe. Germany's coalition just agreed a 7 billion euro corporate tax relief package to give the economy what Chancellor Olaf Scholz called a big boost. But economists are sceptical, noting that it's just 0.2% of GDP, the package is no game changer, and that the sick man will need some more medicine. The quarterly earnings season is rapidly drawing to an end, but Erebus stock slumped 15% after Europe's largest copper producer said it would not reach its full-year profit outlook after identifying considerable discrepancies in target inventories. And in the UK, the ONS revised substantially the GDP estimate, showing that in 2021, current price GDP is now estimated to have increased by 8.5%, revised up 0.9 percentage points, and that follows an unrevised fall of 5.8% in 2020. This means that the UK is not now the only country to have a smaller economy than before the pandemic. These revisions, they say, are mainly because they have richer data from annual surveys, administrative data, and are now able to measure costs incurred by businesses called intermediate consumption directly and can adjust for price deflation at far more detailed levels. These changes will flow into models used by the Bank of England and the Treasury and reflects changes which other countries are set to adopt. So expect to see big swings in GDP measurement ahead. The number wangers are at it again. That said, sentiment has soured alongside a slowing housing market following 14 back-to-back interest rate increases, with prices starting in some areas. A monthly house price data from Halifax on September the 7th will again show whether the £9 trillion UK residential property sector has weakened further. Headline inflation dropped to 6.8% in July. Energy costs are set to fall from October, and wage growth is now positive in real terms. If that sends Brits flocking to the shops, it could strengthen the Bank of England's resolve to stay tough on inflation. Over in Asia, the new month has started with a more positive leaning, helped by a pleasant surprise from China. Chinese factory activity unexpectedly grew in August, according to a private survey, which was released on Friday, as manufacturers benefited from an uptick in new orders on improving local demand. The CAC-in Manufacturing Purchases and Managers Index read 51 in August, much higher than the expectations, which was a reading of about 49.3, as well as last month's reading of 49.2. A reading above 50 indicates expansion, with the PMI reaching its highest level since February. Improving local demand and continued monetary stimulus measures by the Chinese government helped offset a slowing of overseas demand, which dented export-orientated businesses. New order intakes rose, while client spending also increased through the month on improving local demand. This also boosted employment and price pressures in the sector, CAC-in Insight Group said in a statement. But they noted that the Chinese economy still remained under pressure, particularly given that worsening conditions in the country's largest export markets presented a bleak outlook for demand. Seasonal impacts will gradually subside, but the problem of insufficient internal demand and weak expectations may form a vicious cycle for a longer period of time. Combined with uncertainty in external demand, the downward pressure on the economy may continue to increase, they said. The data contrasts with the official PMI data that came out on Thursday, which showed that China's manufacturing sector shrank for a fifth straight month in August, albeit at a slower than expected pace. But the Caixin survey also differs from the official reading in that it focuses more on smaller private enterprises as opposed to bigger state-run enterprises which are surveyed by the official survey. This has helped spur some optimism that the sluggish post-COVID economic recovery in Asia's largest economy is gathering pace, although this must be tempered by the still difficult conditions in China's important property sector. In fact, China stepped up measures to boost the country's faltering economy on Friday, with top banks paving the way for further cuts in lending rates, and sources say that Beijing is planning further additional relaxing of home purchase restrictions. And of course, the People's Bank of China said on Friday that it will cut the amount of foreign exchange that is required to be held by banks as it attempts to support the country's economic recovery. As part of those measures, the authorities will cut the amount of funds institutions need to hold in foreign exchange reserves. The measures cheered investors, and analysts said that they should help to prevent a further downturn in the ailing property sector. China is grappling with a slowdown that has rattled global markets, with the spotlight now firmly focused on troubled developer country garden spiraling debt crisis in a sector that contributes to roughly a quarter of the economy. As pressures mount, the authorities have rolled out a series of measures to spur the economy and to revive the property market, with steps including the easing of some borrowing rules and a cut to the amount of forex banks must hold as reserves. The country is set to take further action, including relaxing home purchaser restrictions and regulations, including the housing ministry, central bank and financial regulators in coming weeks will implement measures that they've been working on over the past few months under State Council guidance. ANZ senior China economist Betty Wang said several nationwide property easing measures in the past couple of weeks exceeded market expectations. This is the first time since 2021 that China has announced a series of nationwide property easing measures that will help restore market confidence and prevent the sector from declining further. In the near term, however, market sentiment will be swayed by the outcome of the crucial investor confidence discussions at Country Garden. Central Bank said on Friday it would cut the foreign exchange reserve requirements, the RRR, by 200 basis points to 4% from 6% from September the 15th, a move seen aimed at slowing the pace of yuan declines. The lenders lowering mortgage rates on Friday included Industrial and Commercial Bank of China, China Construction Bank and Agricultural Bank of China, which cut their deposit rates by between 5 and 25 basis points. Several mid-sized banks also announced that they will start cutting interest rates on a range of deposits by 10 to 25 basis points. The measures helped lift confidence in the market and battered property stocks rallied, with the China CSI 300 Real Estate Index ending up 2.4%, while the Blue Chip CSI 300 Index up 0.5%. Starting from 25th of September, first-time homebuyers with mortgages can apply to their bank for a lower interest rate on their existing loans, they said on Thursday. And the deposit rate cuts are the third such cuts within a year, with a scale of cuts bigger than previous rounds in June and September last year. Low deposit rates will partially offset various pressures on banks' narrowing net interest margins, a key gauge of profitability, said Nicholas Zhu, a banking outlet of Moody's. The impact of the deposit rate cut is material, given that close to three quarters of Chinese banks' liabilities are deposits, Zhu said. And China's mortgage loans totaled 38.6 trillion yuan, or $5.29 trillion, at the end of June. That's about 17% of banks' total loan books. And meanwhile, Beijing and Shanghai on Friday announced that they will allow home buyers to enjoy preferential loans, first-time purchases, regardless of their previous credit records. And to add to that, all of China's first-tier cities broadened the definition of first-home mortgages in a bid to boost buyer sentiment. But the Chinese economy is still expected to face sustained headwinds in the coming months, especially if a real estate crisis intensifies and if demand in its biggest markets dry up further. Anyway, the Shanghai Composite was up 0.43% to 3,133. The Hang Seng was at 18,383. and the Nikkei 225 in Japan was up 0.41% to 32,727. A drip feed of Chinese policy measures to support its ailing economy has pushed iron ore spot prices to their highest level since April, catching the market off guard amid a weaker outlook for Australia's largest trading partner. The spot price for the steelmaking ingredient jumped to $118.20 US dollars overnight on Thursday, compared to $103.45 a ton just over 2 weeks ago. Meanwhile, in Singapore, iron ore futures for the September contract is trading at around $116 US after falling to around $100 in mid-August. Analysts don't think the latest policy measures, though, will be enough to maintain the rally seen in iron ore prices. ANZ senior economy analyst Daniel Haynes said the latest support measures were a drip feed that's had a slightly better impact on the price than forecasters could have anticipated. He described the move as a short-term rally, and it was sentiment driven by policy measures that were yet to evolve into any sizable pickup in demand at the moment. I do suspect the rally is susceptible to a bit of a sell-off if we don't see any follow-through evidence that China's economy is improving, he said. Westpac's head of commodity research, Robert Rennie, also reckoned the spike in the iron ore price was a short-term reaction to the rollout of incremental measures, which were more to prevent the downturn spiral in sentiment from continuing. I don't think the policies are really going to be enough to see a huge imbalance in terms of fueling confidence and activity within construction, and I'm not convinced that's what the Chinese authorities want to do, he added. Now in Australia, the share market dipped on Friday as China's efforts to shore up its stalling economy failed to reverse a negative mood, but the benchmark index ended the week 2.3% higher after 2 weeks of losses. The ASX 200 was up 0.4% to 7,278 at the closing bell, with healthcare and utilities leading losses, pairing its weekly gain. The All Ords also eased 0.4%. Fortescue Metals dropped 5.3% to $20.30 following the departure of Guy Debelle from Fortescue Futures Industries, the third high-profile exit in a week, while iron ore rival Rio Tinto recovered earlier losses to be up 1.2% at $114.23 on Friday. BHP Group slipped 0.3% to $44.74. Hugh Dive, Chief Investment Officer at Ice Fund Management, is negative on iron ore-related stocks because he's doubtful that China's expected stimulus will involve Australian steel. China won't come to the rescue of Australia, he said. Of the ASX top 25 stocks, the only companies that cut dividends in the earnings season was Fortescue, Rio and BHP, and that's a sign that their boards are very concerned with the future. Elsewhere, Qantas came under renewed pressure to finish down 1.5% at $5.82, extending its weekly loss to 6.9% after the competition regulator this week alleged that the airline breached consumer law. Financial technology stock Link Administration rose 1.9% to $1.36 after completing the sale of its banking and credit management unit. All major banks ended in the red, with National Australia Bank down 0.2% to 28.90, Commonwealth Bank off 0.8% to 101.35, and Westpac was off 0.7% to 21.79, while ANZ dropped 0.6% to 25.17. On a brighter note, Santos rallied 1.8% to $7.81 after finalising the delayed sale of a 2.6% stake in its liquefied natural gas project to Papua New Guinea's Kumul Petroleum in a deal that's worth about 2.2 billion Aussie dollars. Stronger coal prices lifted Whitehaven Coal shares up 3.9% to $6.33, and New Hope was 3% higher at $5.80. Likewise, a higher oil price pushed Woodside up 1.6% to $37.60. And wagering operator PointsBet jumped 3.7% to $1.68 following the $1.75 million sale of its US business to Fantic in a $225 million deal. PointsBet will return $314.5 million in capital on Monday. And the Aussie was at 64.50 against the US dollar and 51.25 against the UK pound. Now on Tuesday, the Reserve Bank of Australia is going to meet again, and many people think they will hold rates as Governor Philip Lowe prepares to pass the baton to Deputy Michelle Bullock. A sharp cooling of inflation hints at an easier ride for Bullock after Lowe's controversy-filled legacy of painful backtrack and abrupt shifts that cost him a second term. Rates are at an 11-year high of 4.1% after 400 basis points of tightening since May 2022. Traders expect this to be the peak after inflation unexpectedly eased to a 17-month trough below 5% in July. But it won't all be plain sailing because economic risks in top trade partner China are ramping up right as things at home look a little rosier. And there was a lot of number wanging going on with that inflation number, as I discussed earlier in the week. Now here's NAB's view. RBA Governor Lowe's final board meeting is widely expected to come and go without incident. The data flows since August, when the board saw a credible path back to the inflation target with the cash rate staying at its current level, shouldn't force a reassessment. And if anything, it's been somewhat encouraging on balance. Nonetheless, the guidance that some further tightening of monetary policy may be required is likely to remain, and we think risks remain that the inflation data over the next couple of months could see the RBA act on the tightening basis. And Lowe will give a final speech, some closing remarks, at the Anika Foundation in Sydney on Thursday. And finally, the bullish momentum that propelled Bitcoin to a 56.4% year-to-date gain has all but vanished as the Bitcoin price lost 13% to close out the month of August. Bitcoin's price seemingly had bullish momentum after the Grayscale court victory against the United States Securities and Exchange Commission, but those gains have evaporated. The short-term uncertainty of the crypto market, however, does not necessarily appear to have changed institutional investors' long-term outlook. Despite a hostile US regulatory environment, large institutions are pushing for Bitcoin financial instruments, which may spark a bull run. Grayscale, for example, directly urged the SEC to approve all Bitcoin ETFs. But despite the urgency of some major financial firms, Bitwise, for example, has officially withdrawn its Bitcoin and Ether ETF applications, and the SEC seems poised to continue to delay decisions on approving Bitcoin ETFs, including BlackRock's application, until 2024, and that could be negatively impacting investor sentiment and price action across the crypto market. Bitcoin's market structure has been recovering somewhat since the start of 2023, but its recent price action has turned the market structure bearish. Despite the surge of Bitcoin open interest, there is a lack of consolidation above 27,000 US, and some analysts believe the Bitcoin price is on the road to about 23,000 US. It was last at 25,798. While some investors have speculated that BlackRock may be suppressing the Bitcoin price ahead of its eventual ETF launch, that argument seems to be a conspiracy, as it has more to lose from a Bitcoin price crash. To my mind, the Bitcoin price continues to be directly impacted by macroeconomic events, and it's also likely that further regulatory actions and interest rate hikes will continue to have some effect on the Bitcoin price. Even as China ruled that virtual assets are legal property on September the 1st, the Bitcoin price continued to drop. And here's the point. Wherever you look, there's data flowing all over the place, but it's all up and down, and that is why there is a lot of uncertainty in the markets. And as I said at the start, the problem is central banks have now created a monster for themselves because they are data dependent. Data comes, data goes. What will they do? I suspect as we come into the September-October period, markets will continue to struggle, volatility will be high, and expect more data surprises. I still don't think that we're out of the woods yet. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.